Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And we are live this afternoon at The Pint, downtown Jasper and 109th. By the way, 4-4 tie, Canada-USA, so that is terrific news. TBA ended up beating Detroit. And we are live on the radio until 2 o'clock today. And we're honored to be joined by Mr. Bob Stauffer on the phone. Bob, how are you, man?
Good, Alan. Pleasure to be on the show. First of all, so 4-4, they headed to overtime in that game?
Connor, are they headed to overtime now?
They're in overtime.
They're in overtime now.
All right, they're in overtime. No, that's... You know, that's a major accomplishment for Canada because, Alan, as you know, I mean, basically that U.S. team is stacked and the Canadian team is sort of picked from the scraps of the, you know, the major junior programs that have been eliminated in the first round of their respective CHL playoff series. So, you know, some of the top-end guys that would be eligible to play, you know, Ryan Strome and Dougie Hamilton aren't available, and Nugent Hopkins just finishing up as well late in the second round, so...
As we talk about it, the USA just scored, so it's 5-4 now. But
that's it. They're out then, eh?
So, yeah.
But still, top just four.
Nice
finish.
Run. Yep.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see how Mark McNeil and Mark Scheifele did. A couple centermen that a lot of people think sort of this event, the U18, will end up deciding kind of who goes higher between those two kids. Of course, McNeil's the Southside Athletic Club kid from Edmonton, and Scheifele's a similar build, not as thick, but... a pretty good player out of the Ontario Hockey League.
Let's start there, Bob. Let's start at the draft. We've talked a lot today and over the last few shows about the number one overall, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins seems to be carrying the day with regard to most of the people we've talked to. Is McNeil a guy? I mean, I know you've talked about him. I've seen him a little bit. I've read some stats on him. He looks absolutely perfect based on scouting report for this Edmonton Oilers team. Up the middle, strong, got some power forward ability, and a guy that really could change the tenor of the center position along with somebody like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins?
Well, I mean, I'm a little biased. I think you know that. First of all, with Nugent-Hopkins, you know, I had an opportunity to talk to five NHL general managers in the month of March. And at that time, I was 3-2 in support for Larson, and that was before Nugent-Hopkins had his second tear. It was after his first tear where he had 27 points in 9 games, but it was before the stretch where he scored 11 goals in the final 8 games to close out the regular season, ended up with 19 points in the last 8 games. I have talked to scouts from 4 different NHL organizations in the last 2 weeks, and all 4 of them now have Nugent Hopkins number 1. So I found that interesting. I can also tell you that it's my belief that there are people in the Edmonton Oilers organization that think the upside for Nugent Hopkins is greater than it was for Sagan in terms of the offensive side, that maybe, you know, there might be a feeling, you know, I just get that sense that's out there, and it's not just the Oilers that are feeling this way, but there's some other people out there that feel that Nugent Hopkins could be a better offensive player than Sagan down the road. Maybe Sagan might be a better all-around centerman, but Nugent Hopkins might be, you know, a more prolific offensive force, and I think that that bodes well for him in terms of the draft. In terms of McNeil, there's some question marks about him. You know, Prince Albert kind of played a loosey-goosey style, Alan, under Bruno Campisi, kind of lets him go a bit, and I like him. There's some others that, you know, the viewings weren't great. He, too, had a really good stretch to close out the season. He had 20 points in his final 10 games. So they had a pretty good run to close the year for PA, and he had a good playoff against a very good team, Saskatoon. So I talked to Curtis Hamilton, and he said McNeil was their best player. So that's you know, that's something that's probably going to help him out. But I know the U18s were going to be a big deal for him. And going into today's game, and I just got off the plane coming back from Oklahoma City, he had a goal and 6 points, and I know that Scheifele had 5 goals and 6 points, and Scheifele had been the better player through the first 4 or 5 games there.
Bob, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a player who, you know, we're at a point now in the season where he's not playing. We're not going to see him in the Memorial Cup. Do you think there's a parallel between the way he played in the Oil Kings series and down the stretch when it seemed like he needed to score some goals to prove his worth, and he did it like that, like magic, like he could do it any time? Do you think there's a parallel between that and Taylor Hall's enormous response to that huge hit that he took in Game 1 of the Memorial Cup? Do you think there's a kind of we're seeing it again where a guy emerges late in draft year?
I don't know. You know, I'd have to say no. I think that there was some concern. I know some people threw some stats out there about guys that didn't score 30 goals. in their draft years, and you know they have to be more dominant in terms of being a finisher. I have seen Ryan play 7 times this season now, and you know, to me, he's the guy. So it they're just completely different players. You know, Hall's a more dynamic player. I would suggest that I think Nugent Hopkins has a chance to be the most prolific scorer from this year's draft. But Nugent Hopkins is a subtler player, and he had problems against heavy teams. And make no mistake about it. I mean, Medicine Hat, Sean Clouston's a good coach. And Medicine Hat, you know, grinded it out. And the one thing that was apparent, the best forward for Red Deer consistently through both series was a guy named Brett Ferguson, a 20-year-old, who likely will be headed to the University of Alberta this fall. So, you know, and Nugent Hopkins never played with him in any of the games that I saw. So that kind of tells you that maybe the supporting cast wasn't there. But when they played those bigger teams, he was less noticeable. When he played other teams that had smaller forwards, like the Oil Kings, you know, he was able to control the tenor of the play a little bit more. But still, that being said, I mean, there are scouts, Alan, that I've talked to, and there were scouts, and I've mentioned this to you before, that didn't think Joe Sakic was going to be a good WHL player, let alone a good NHL player. And now there's guys saying, well, he's a cross between Joe Sakic and Pavel Datsyuk. So, you know, there's something with this kid, but he's not the same player as Hall. And I think what Hall did was more dramatic, frankly. I really do. I mean, just the juxtaposition of what occurred in about a 3-minute span of that game in the Memorial Cup after Harmonic lit him up. I mean, that's something you'll never forget.
No, I'll remember it. Just on the big stage. That's what I think it will always be remembered. A few people have been talking. Jonathan Willis, we had him on earlier this hour. David Staples as well. A little bit about Nugent Hopkins and his even strength scoring totals compared to Jonathan Huberdeau or Sean Couturier. He's flagging a little bit. Power play, obviously a very impressive number, but at even strength, not necessarily as impressive. David Staples is floating the theory that it has to do with time on ice. Nugent Hopkins plays in a rotation where he, at even strength, he might be considered a second line center. How do you respond to that?
It's interesting. I mean, first of all, I think it's easier to score and produce in the Quebec League, so that they factor it based upon goals scored per game in the Quebec League versus goals scored in the WHL.
When I looked at it, I factored in the fact that the Q and the W are almost even, and the OHL is the more offensive league this year.
This year it is, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that the thing is with the Quebec League, there's more major junior teams in the Quebec League than there's midget triple A programs. So, you know, I think there's a bottom end in terms of the Quebec League. Like, I heard some of your comment with Willis, and I share your thoughts on Couturier. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it's between Larson and then Nugent Hopkins a little ahead of Couturier, but those are the three guys. I think we can assume that Landeskog doesn't make sense for the Oilers, partially because of positional situation, and I also don't think he's an elite level scorer. I do think Couturier's got a chance to be a hell of a center.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand why. I think it's the same. The same thing that happened to Couturier in this year's draft happened to Jay Bouwmeester back in 2002. Now, that being said, looks like there were some people right on downgrading Jay Bouwmeester as time went on in 2002, because he's never become a superstar player. And I think Rick Nash is as close to, he's not one of the top three players in the league, and I consider a superstar to be a top three player in the league. You know, at times this year it'd be, you know, Crosby, Ovechkin, and Stamkos. But he's in that next tier, and Bouwmeester is not in that next tier. So as for the different leagues, as for the opportunity, Bryman Fraze was brought over in the trade with Ferraro's kid, and he did see significant minutes at center this year in Red Deer. I also think part of it's the style of game the Red Deer plays. You know, they're a defensive team. You take a look at the numbers that Darcy Kuemper put up this year, and I don't think that he'll prove in the American Hockey League that he's as good a goaltender as the numbers would suggest that he was in the WHL. And that's a reflection upon kids like, you know, Alex Petrovic and Dumba, who's going to go in the first round next year, and Colin Archer and guys like that on the Red Deer defense, and the commitment that Jesse Wallen had to defense this year. So I think part of it might be Fraze playing ahead of him at times, and playing with a guy like Ferguson. And the other part of it might be the fact that they were more committed to the overall team defense than maybe a couple of the, you know, players that were playing in the queue were.
I would agree with you, and I'd also add that some of those Q teams that made the playoffs were atrocious. Very, there seems as though there's a major difference between good and bad in the Q. And, I mean, I guess you have to add up the numbers and see what Huberdeau and Couturier were doing against those Sisters of the Week teams and see if there's anything to be read into that. Let's shift gears here really quickly. You're back from Oklahoma City. What were your impressions of that Barons team?
Well, I think, first of all, the market's going to work. They need a team in Tulsa to really hit the home run there. And you'll recall there was a time that Vancouver had their farm team in Tulsa, right?
Yep.
Mm. So imagine if Winnipeg ends up getting a team here. I mean, I think that it's a unique situation. My impressions of the team were Alex Giroux was letting the team down offensively up front. He was not very good in the three games that I saw. Marco Arcabella was an interesting signing. He obviously must have played better in the 26 games in the regular season, Alan, because he didn't do much for me as a second-line center. Hunter Tremblay was probably the biggest revelation of anybody. He clearly proved he could play right away. I think Tanner House is going to be a good pickup as well, and they paid for him. He's got a pretty good deal. Defensively, they missed the injury to Colton Tubert. If you'd seen Colton Tubert in the first 15 minutes of the first game down there, on Tuesday night, I mean, Oilers fans would have been salivating. We've not, as physical as Theo Pekin could be, we've not seen a guy like that. You know, he was just an absolute monster crushing guys.
He's not Dave Manson, though. He's not that tough. Like, he's not big and tough and brutish, is he?
Well, I'd say late in Dave's career, he was phony tough. You know, Dave Manson would run Pavel Bure in turnbuckles, but after he got punched in the throat, he kind of stopped.
But I enjoyed it right up until after the Bure hit, though.
Pardon me?
I'm just teasing you. No,
yeah, well, no. I mean, he's not. I mean, Dave Manson, okay, in fairness, I'd say relative to the, I mean, Dave Manson played in a tougher time and played on a PA Raider team that featured Ken Baumgartner. And in relative to today, Colton Tubert was a dark lord of the WHL, just like Dave Manson was, right? I mean, McElrath was the one guy that kind of disposed of that myth a bit with Tubert. But he's not fought, by the way, as a member of the Oklahoma City Barons. And things a shoulder injury. There is something there with this kid. You know, he's got some. I mean, Manson put up numbers briefly in his career and then radically dropped off late. I don't think Tubert will ever be, put more than 30 points up in a season. But I think there's a chance he's going to be a better puck mover and puck distributor than a guy like Matt Green. Matt Green's a number five. I think the hope is that Tubert can be a number four. And what I saw, even in the one game we saw him, suggests he's their best prospect on defense. Plante is struggling and might only ever be a six at the NHL level. And then amongst the forwards, I mean, Hartikainen and Omark are going to be here next year. I don't think there's any question about that. And they're going to need to sign a couple of veteran AHL guys if Giroux goes over to Europe, as many people think, and McDonald decides to go elsewhere. They have offered McDonald, they've talked contract with him, including back to an NHL deal, but he's hit the home run this year up to 42 goals.
Yeah. Two questions real quick about the AHL team. Plante is fighting. Is that an effort for him to, try to make himself more useful in a utility role? And has Omark been doing anything since he went back down?
Omark's problem is he's playing with guys that can't think the game on his level, at that level. And so he was quiet. The only goal he scored, he banked in off the goaltender from behind the net. Regarding Plante, still prone to taking stupid penalties. He took two bad ones last night, one that gave up the game-winning goal, the first goal of the game, and really gave the Bulldogs momentum. Yes, he's been. That's the one thing, Alan, that surprised me about, and you know how upset I was when that dropped.
I remember the day I was there at Jenks.
and I actually showed the writer from the paper in Oklahoma that call, and I pulled it up off the wire, and I didn't like either of the two picks. And I think with Plante, his competitiveness has surprised me, because I thought he had no jam when he played in Calgary in the WHL. But conversely, I thought he'd be better at moving the puck, and it just hasn't come to fruition. Let's see what happens next year. He's going to get a glorious opportunity. They're going to probably re-sign Petio. Helmer's signed for next year. Those will be their two veteran guys. Real opportunity for Tubert and Plante to really grow next year in OKC if Petrie's up here with the Oilers.
Do you see the Oilers at the big league level bringing in a Vandermeer to push back the depth chart and make it unlikely that a pure rookie is going to play here next year?
Well, I think, Alan, no, I think Petrie's going to play with Whitney. If they don't move one of Schmid or Gilbert, because that's always a possibility, then I think that'll be the second pairing. I think the third pairing will be Tuckum and Foster, and Chorney has to clear waivers. So,
oh. Right.
If you just look, if you look at it that way, you know, there's seven defensemen. I'll be interested to see what happens with Jones. I wonder if Jones prices himself out of the market and gets a reality kick come free agency. You know, I think that Jones is worth 1.25 a year, but I wouldn't go beyond that. I'd maybe give him 2 years of that to reward him for this year. But if he's looking for 1.5 to 2, not on my dime. That's kind of the way I see it. But, you know, I don't think – I wouldn't mind seeing a veteran UFA defenseman signed if they can get the right requisite amount back if they were to move somebody in the back end. And there's three guys that cannot be moved to me. One is Whitney, who's their best player last year for 35 games, Allen. And then I wouldn't move Petrie and I wouldn't move Peckham. So you know, that leaves some other guys that you might be able to see if he can make something happen for.
Bob, is Smead on the bubble here?
Not necessarily. You know, it's just, what is he? What do you think he is?
Well, I've been asking that for if he can play top 4 minutes, Bob, if he can play that shutdown role with a nice puck mover and they can be effective in the second pairing, then he's a good hockey player and he's not overpaid. I don't know the answer to that. Do you?
Well, for 40 games, he struggled coming off a pretty serious injury. So, you know, there were stretches. And how do you judge the final 40 games? Because the team didn't have their best defenseman playing and that knocked everybody up a peg. And revealed guys for what they're not. I mean, Tom Gilbert's a second pairing guy. I think Petrie, if Whitney takes him aside, I think Petrie's got a chance to be a default top two guy next year here in Edmonton. There's no question that Whitney's a top two guy, and Gilbert's better left in that second pairing. So, you know, can Gilbert and Schmid give this team decent 3-4 minutes? You know, I think that's the hope. I'm not necessarily sold that's going to occur based upon their body of work so far.
Final question, and this is kind of blue skying it, but with the allowance that Jeff Petrie's rookie season was this one, he won't qualify next year. Do you see anybody aside from Hartikainen as a really strong option for a rookie making the team in the fall?
That's a good question. Yeah, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins if they draft him, or excellent. Adam Larson.
Excellent answer. Bob, okay. Thanks for this.
Anytime, Alan. Take care.
All
good
right.
Luck with the show.
Thanks, man. Bob Stauffer. Of course, you know him from every radio station that has anything to do with sports in the city of Edmonton, and, of course, ours as well with Oilers Lunch. And this is Nation Radio, Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. We're live at the Pine until 2 o'clock today, and we'll be back with Jason Greger right after this.